Hi, this is Shauna Guzman, and you're listening to the Airborne Mind Show.
Hello, everyone. This is Ms. Bahawk. Thank you so much for joining me today, and welcome back to the show. Whether this is your first, second, 10th, or 30th episode, I appreciate you tuning in. Your time, your energy, your attention, and your ears mean the world to me. Without you listening, this show would not be where it is today. So once again, thank you. Before we get started, the biggest compliment that you can give is by leaving a review on iTunes. You have no idea how much that helps in terms of rankings, bringing more awareness to the show, and bringing on more interesting guests. So if you could take 2 or 3 minutes, not while you're driving, but take 2 or 3 minutes, go ahead, leave a review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to head over to theairbornemind.com where you can check out some free resources and the full show notes there as well. Today's episode is brought to you by Revive RX. Revive RX has played a huge role in my recovery over the last 6 months or so. If you are in the market for a post-workout supplement or a protein supplement, and you want something that's clean, that's effective, and that is simple, I highly recommend their products. I obviously use them myself. I personally love the Recover formula in the strawberry flavor, and I take 4 scoops after my training sessions. If you want some education around, you know, is a protein supplement right for you? What's the difference between Recover and Rebuild? And honestly, just some good basic nutrition information. I shot a couple of videos with Marcus Philly that you can get on my site exclusively, theairbornemind.com. And if you would like to get a 10% discount on ReviveRx supplements, head over to ReviveRx.com and enter the code MIZ10, M-I-Z-1-0. Once again, that's ReviveRx.com, MIZ10. Today, my guest is Shauna Guzman. She is a coach here at Revival Strength. Shauna is somebody that I've had the chance to learn a lot from over the last several months, especially when it comes to anything endurance related. She has had a huge swimming background, and as a master swimmer, she won a world championship in the 200 meter backstroke in 2006 and multiple national titles from 2006 to 2012. She's currently coached by Mike Lee, who has been on the show, and is focused on developing herself to compete in the 40-plus division of the CrossFit Games this year. To me, the most fascinating thing is to be able to watch in real time the consistency, the discipline, and the mastering of the mundane that has to happen to pursue success in two different areas, right? So coaching and the responsibilities that come with that, then competing at a high level, the training, the recovery, the lifestyle that comes with that, and then doing the dance between the two and doing it for a long period of time. So I've learned a ton from Shauna in that sense, and a ton about training, program design, and nutrition as well. So I was really excited to finally have her on. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and more importantly, hope you do something with it. Shauna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I am super excited. It's about time. You're a coach here at Revival Strength, and obviously we've gotten a chance to know each other over the last several months, and I'm excited to have you on and just kind of dig into what got you started here at Revival Strength, your journey as an athlete, journey as a coach, and there's so many interesting things about you that I'm excited to explore throughout this.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, give us a little bit of context and a little bit of background as to how you got started in coaching, and then maybe as how you got started as an athlete as well. I know you have an extensive swimming background, and how that led you into kind of the sport of fitness.
Yeah, I got started coaching back when I ended acupuncture school. Mm-hmm. So I found someone that wanted to bring me on as an acupuncturist in their gym and also do some outdoor fitness classes, so coaching outdoors and then do personal training. At the same time as that was going on, I started going back into swimming, becoming a competitive swimmer again, and found a club team that I swam with in Santa Cruz. And through that, the head coach was, you know, asked me if I wanted to do some coaching on the side with the younger kids. So I did that as well. So I was a swim coach, outdoor fitness coach, and personal trainer.
Do you think, you said you were coaching kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did that give you, because I've done that with squash before, where I was kind of like the strength and conditioning dude for a squash team. And I was really shocked at the difference in coaching that you have to kind of bring to the table when you're working with kids and teens versus like adults. Did you notice that at all? Or do you, you know, do you think that experience for you kind of helped your coaching style maybe as you started working with older people?
Definitely different coaching. Let's see, you know, in some ways, no, like, you know, adults don't listen just as much as kids don't listen sometimes.
Yeah.
So in that way, it was a little bit of the same, but also, it is very different in coaching kids and, you know, knowing when to push and knowing, you know, when not to push and, you know, seeing how the parents are with the kids. You know, you don't want to overcoach a kid that's already getting a lot of pressure from the parents. Mm. You know, and then there are other kids that maybe you could push a little bit more. So I found that actually the middle school kids were more challenging to coach. Some of them just, you know, weren't very disciplined. And, you know, they're just in that more defiant sort of age. Whereas like the 9-10 year olds, they like look at you at like you're like a god, you know, like they'll do anything that you say. So that they were much easier to coach for me. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to dig into was swimming. Why? Mm-hmm. What drew you to swimming versus other maybe endurance sports?
Good question. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I remember, because I was a fairly good swimmer and also a good runner at a young age, and there kind of came a time where I needed to decide between both of them. Mm-hmm. I got the push for swimming. I just had some adults that just said, "Wow, like you're such a great swimmer! Like you know," that just gave me the confidence that just, you know, motivated me to keep going with it.
Yeah.
I also, my stepdad, he had kids that were swimmers, and so he, you know, had experience with the sport and saw that I was a good swimmer and just pushed me in that, you know, well, I don't want to say pushed, but, you know, just edged me towards that direction. So that's how I got into it. And there was my best friend across the street from me swam, and she was on a summer league team. And so I was like, oh, I want to do that with her. And so that's how I started.
And now over time, you know, that's kind of evolved into you now competing and training and being involved in the sport of fitness. What was that experience like? What made you want to kind of pursue, you know, that? Were there any parallels between swimming and competing in CrossFit at all?
Absolutely. I mean, just to give you a little background, like going into a Division I school, I was under 100 pounds competing in swimming. And I'm 5'3". I mean, like, it's kind of an anomaly. You don't really see that within the sport of swimming. So it was very apparent when I got into my freshman year that I was weak. Like, I couldn't even lift the 45-pound bar for a bench press. And I knew that that was, you know, a weakness of mine, and that I just kind of attacked it and got into it. And so I got into strength training and just really enjoyed it. And then over the years, when I went back to swimming as my main sport in my mid-20s and wanted to take it to the next level again, I knew I was like, okay, I need to get back in the gym and get after it and get strong. And I was good at relative body weight. Like I could do pull-ups, I could do push-ups, but always like the barbell and loaded stuff was always a challenge for me. So it just, I just became to love, like I loved strength training and really got into it. And that's just carried over into the sport of fitness as I started to get away from the endurance sports.
Gotcha. Now, circling back to acupuncture school, right? What drew your interest into kind of pursuing that? And then what led you to going from there into coaching?
Yeah. You know, I knew that I wanted to help people. You know, I knew I wanted to, and I knew it was health related. Medical school just wasn't, I knew that wasn't for me. Allopathic medicine. I mean, it's a great medicine. I just didn't want to be someone that was giving, you know, prescription medication. I wanted to be someone that was being more on the preventative side. So I started researching just different types of medicines that I could go into other than allopathic medicine and came across traditional Chinese medicine, picked up a book, started reading it, and just was like, this is what I want to do. I want to go to acupuncture school. So I started researching, you know, acupuncture schools. And, you know, it just happened when I graduated that, you know, I was speaking about before, was that woman just owned a gym and was looking for an acupuncturist. And I thought, okay, well, what a way to bridge two things that I really am passionate about, acupuncture and fitness, and how I could help people with, you know, both in that same facility.
And then eventually, how did we get into furthering kind of coaching? Because you went from there to eventually, I'm sure, group fitness, and then individual design came maybe later on. But walk me through that trajectory a little bit.
Yeah, so I had a practice in Santa Cruz, an acupuncture practice. It was doing really well. And then a lot of my patients at the time came from school districts. So, and there was just a big overhaul of school districts at the time. So their health insurance was changing. So a lot of the patients that I had started to not come, you know, they weren't coming as often. So it was either, okay, A, I need to get back out and start marketing again and really build my practice. Or B, maybe this is my opportunity to move out of Santa Cruz. I was feeling a little bit stagnant there. And so I decided to take the move. But when it came to actually rebuilding my practice, I mean, it took me 3 years to get my practice to where it was. I just didn't have the motivation anymore. I just, you know, I tried. And again, I came across another gym in San Francisco that was a same situation as the one in Santa Cruz, where they were looking for an acupuncturist, but also looking for someone to be a personal trainer and outdoor fitness type coach. And it was more of an endurance-based gym where they had CompuTrainer classes and things like that. So the coaching became more of a priority, and the acupuncture just became less of a priority over time. And I just gravitated more towards being a coach and just didn't want to put forth the efforts to, you know, build another acupuncture practice again.
Yeah. I mean, when I think of my trajectory as a coach, it went through that, you know, I started with kind of group fitness and was more of like a, you know, fitness instructor, then maybe personal training, then spinning. And like, it was this variety of stuff that eventually led me back to group fitness. And then I was there for multiple years. And it was just this process of evolution where you're kind of learning, like, what does it mean to be a coach, you know, and you're uncovering these things as you have more experience and you're working with different people. And like, it's almost like a self-discovery process. Is that something that kind of happened for you in maybe your own way, where, you know, you started with acupuncture, then we did some personal training, and then we did some group fitness, and along the way, like, what made you kind of start to pursue or want to pursue individual design?
Yeah, I think honestly it was, finding a gym in Mill Valley that you know, I started to go to as an athlete. I was in the process of doing some marathon training and I came across a gym that a friend recommended. Was like, hey, you know, I think you'd be into this CrossFit thing, you know. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I got injured before. And, you know, he was like, no, I think this is, you know, the right fit for you. This gym really knows how to coach, you know, CrossFit. And I said, okay, I'll give it another try. And, you know, I started to go there and enjoyed it and really loved the environment and the people there. And, you know, soon enough, I became a coach there as well. And that was when I met Marcus Philly. He was the owner of that gym, part owner of that gym. And, you know, I just really started to learn from him, and he really got me into the individual design, you know, introduced me to OPEX and James and the whole crew down there. And that's where I just, you know, realized like, okay, I need to do this individual design coaching, because it really just encompassed, you know, it just really like put everything together, you know, this holistic approach, this comprehensive approach that's like, okay, nutrition, lifestyle, and fitness.
And at this time, were you also like a client yourself and being coached as an individual design client, or did that come later?
That came later. No, I was, you know, actually I got into a little bit of weightlifting for a while. Mm-hmm. Got some programming from Diane Fu and at San Francisco CrossFit, and I just really enjoyed the Olympic lifts and really wanted to learn how to do them, you know, more efficiently and better, and gravitated more towards that. And then it was after, you know, maybe a year of that where I decided I missed, you know, being an endurance athlete. I just missed being aerobic, basically. Yeah. And that's when I started doing individual design getting individual design by myself from Mike Lee.
And how have the two kind of played a role together? Because I heard James say this when he was on the show, where he's like, you know, he trains at this point to kind of refine his systems, or that's one of the reasons that he trains. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a while. And then when I was in the gym the other day, and I've been talking to you about this, like writing MAP 7 prescriptions and stuff like that, and then trying out, seeing how it feels. And I started realizing, wow, that's kind of a reason why I do this too, is like it helps me get a feel for how to create better programs and in a sense refine my own system a little bit better. So have you noticed any parallels between you being coached, you know, by Mike Lee, and then you also being a coach and coaching other people? Is there any correlation between the two?
Absolutely. I mean, I think at this point in my coaching career, I need that side. Like, I need to be the athlete right now. I learn a lot from doing. That's just how my brain works. Like, yeah. If I'm doing things and I'm implementing things into my life, whether it be my own training, my own lifestyle changes, my own nutrition, whatever it may be, my daily routines, I can really carry that over to my coaching. And so at this point, you know, I need that part of that's essential to like my coaching journey is being an athlete. You know, I definitely look at like things that Mike gives me and it's like, oh, okay, wow. You know, I could tweak this, or this is what I could do for another one of my athletes. Or, you know, I learn a lot from the programs that he writes for me. Not that I'm, you know, taking those programs and giving them to someone else necessarily, but it's like, oh, okay, I see what he's trying to do here with me. This is what I need to apply with another athlete of mine.
And we talked about this, you know, off the air too. It's like juggling. It's like this juggling act, right? Being an athlete, being a coach, being able to balance the two. You know, what are some challenges that you think, you know, have come up for you, or some obstacles you faced along the way, and how'd you kind of address that in being? Because now you seem to have a bit of a rhythm with it, right? It's like you're. Things are kind of how I look at Marcus. Like, he comes in, he knows exactly what he's doing at what time. It's just like so systematic, and there's this consistency there, and you have that same thing, right? So along the way, what has been kind of what have been the challenges, and then what did you do to kind of systemize that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I think sometimes it's a daily challenge. Like I even had a challenge today where, you know, I overbooked myself today, and it's like, you know, in the back of my mind, like I know to keep my Monday afternoons like free of clients, but then I put one in and then I felt like it compromised a little bit of my training. So just being mindful of that, it's like, okay, I make a mental note today. It's like, okay, there was a reason why you took, you know, you have Monday afternoons blocked off. And so it's just being, you know, really being structured with that and having boundaries. That's what I've really realized, is like creating those boundaries with my clients and my schedule and sticking to it is super important if I'm trying to juggle having, you know, still being an athlete, a competitive athlete, and being a coach. You know, I also just know at this point in my coaching career, if I still have athletic goals, which I do, as or being a competitive athlete, then, you know, I can't take on too many clients. I can't take on this, you know, that's not my priority right now. My priority right now is being, you know, I still have things like unfinished business, I guess you could call it, as far as being a competitive athlete. And, you know, I want to see those through the end. And, you know, I feel like I'll know when that's over, and then it'll be like, okay, I can take on, you know, I can more focus on my coaching career a little, you know, at that time.
Yeah. What are some of those kind of signs for you, maybe, that the unfinished business, right? Like what mm-hmm. comes up for you that would signify that, okay, I've done what I needed to do, you know, like that you feel content and fulfilled with being an athlete or competing. And I know that's a deep question and probably a deep answer, but what comes to mind for you right off the bat there?
Well, I definitely think, you know, like we were talking about this the other day, you know, if someone was to say like your athletic career is done, I think like I'd have a moment where I'd start crying, you know, like,
yeah.
So having like that feeling of like, no, I don't want that taken away. Like that's a definite like sign that I'm not done. You know, I see the improvement and the progress that I make from year to year, and I'm still progressing. Like I'm not, you know, flatlining in any sort of area. I'm not just like coasting. So I feel like that's also a sign that like I can keep going and keep getting better at my sport. You know, I don't know what will be the sign that I'm done. You know, it's funny. I had a consult with Mike and talking about like, you know, my end game is like to make the CrossFit games. Like I'd love to make the CrossFit games, and I'm going to do this until I make it. And, you know, he brought up an interesting point of like, well, you know, Shauna, like really, like how fulfilled are you going to be from just going to the CrossFit games? You know, like maybe that's not the end all be all, you know? Which was kind of like mind blown a little bit, but at the same time, you know, if I don't make it to the games, I don't make it to the games. I just know right now I'm not done.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, you know, with all the things that I just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How important are these consults? I mean, you see it from a coaching perspective that you have with your own clients, but you personally, being a client and having these consults with Mike or whoever your coaches have been in the past, and maybe having that opportunity or that space to kind of explore some of this stuff, does it play a big role for you? You know, how does that impact kind of the athletic journey overall?
You know, I think it's a deep, like, I think it impacts a lot in the sense that, like, it's just, I get goosebumps almost thinking about it, but it's like, it's just pure honesty. You know, it's like I feel like I can be totally honest with my coach and how I'm feeling and what I want, and there's no judgment, and there's no, no judgment. And I don't feel like I really ever got that in swimming. Like, I don't feel like, and I don't know if it just wasn't the culture back then. I don't know if maybe I just wasn't ready for that. But you know, there were times where I was really burnt out in swimming, and I wanted to tell my coach, like, I want to quit. Like, I'm done. You know, like, I'm so done with this. But I was so afraid to, because I was afraid that, you know, I would be looked at as, you know, oh, you're just being a wimp. You know, you're just not, you know, just suck it up, you know, kind of a thing. And I feel like that was the mentality back then, because it was, swimming was very much like, we called it garbage yardage. It was just like quantity, not necessarily quality. And so, yeah, I just always thought that that would be, you know, construed as weak. So I feel like with, you know, with my coach, like I can just be honest with how I'm feeling and what my goals are. And there's like this transparency and in that, like, you know, he gets to know me better. And so that therefore he's able to program for me better. And it's, yeah, I think the consult process is like essential.
You know, what maybe do you do, or maybe have that you've seen through going through this process with Mike and these consultations that gives you that feeling of, okay, this is a no judgment zone. Like I can be totally honest here. Have there been certain elements that you've consciously kind of implemented into your own coaching that welcomes that from other clients that you're working with? Or is this kind of just this intuitive feel that it's like, all right, I can be myself here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more of an intuitive feel. You know, and I've been, you know, now working with Mike for over 3 years. So I feel, you know, there's a sense of comfort, you know, and I can remember even early on when I was doing like my testing process with Mike, and it was like, I felt, you know, like I wasn't super stoked with all my results, you know, and I think that he was getting that kind of like, you know, that vibe that I wasn't super stoked about my results and just like, man, I could have done better on this, and, you know, just like all the, that kind of commentary. And he was like, look, these are just numbers. Like, this is just a baseline, you know, there's no judgment here, you know, just do the best you can. And I think that's, that definitely set the tone of like, okay, calm down, just do the tests and, you know, treat it as a baseline. So,
'cause it's key. I feel like it's such a key part of the coaching process to somehow welcome that type of that feel, right? Like this is a no judgment zone, especially when we get into things like food and like this, there's, for a lot of people, there's this built up self-judgment around food, and it's like, you know, we're looking at your food logs, we're giving you advice, it's like there has to be this you know, maybe sensitivity or this empathy towards the other person, and being able to coach without this judgment, because I think people can get that in a lot of other places, but I think something we do really well here at Revival Strength is that is like, there is no judgment. It's like, where are we, you know, where are we today? And then like, where, how do we kind of move from here? It's not, there's, I don't get that judgment type of feel from any of the coaches, you know? And I think that's really special. It's not everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how about like when we think about learning, right? You know, of course, OPEX has played a huge role in your education. And then also, I'm curious to know, how has being around Marcus kind of influenced you in terms of, you know, what you've learned in programming and maybe other elements that you've gained from just kind of being around him? But have there been any things that you've just absorbed from like being around him day to day? And like, when you add that up over the course of like years?
Yeah. You know, we touched this on this on one of the meetings, but like, you know, I really admire Marcus's consistency, like his ability just to day in, day out, be consistent with, you know, basic lifestyle guidelines, his sleep, his nutrition, his training. You know, when he's up there working, he's got his headphones in, he's just zoned, you know, he's in it. And, you know, those things I've definitely taken away as far as being an athlete and being a coach. You know, he's helped me just be more structured in my calendar, and, you know, all of that has helped tremendously. And definitely, you know, his programming, I mean, he's been doing it for so long. And I always, you know, I actually even had a meeting with him, 30-minute meeting with him today about programming. And, you know, it just getting his eye on things, and he's so quick to just be like, yep, this is what you got to do. And just, you know, map seven, and just like puts it out there for like 8 weeks. And it's like, okay, he just did that in like 2 nanoseconds, you know? So I definitely, you know, I definitely appreciate that. Just his, you know, all his knowledge. And, yeah, and I just, I feel like I can continue learning from him for a while, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And I had, after you had brought that up, that consistency element, like, I appreciated that even more because I was like, damn, you're right. Like, think about the basic lifestyle guidelines that we keep kind of talking about, you know, like sleep, hydration, and things mm-hmm. like that. When you really think about it day to day, it can become very difficult to maintain those things. And it's like, to be able to do that on a consistent basis, not just for a week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 1 year, but like multiple years, like 5 years, seven mm-hmm. years. It's just, it's impressive when you really start to sit down and kind of think about that. It's like, you have to really have some strong belief in like where you're going and what you know this is kind of leading you towards.
Right.
To be able to be so regimented and structured and routine around what you do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Honesty, mm-hmm. right? That's been something that, you know, has, it's a word that resonates with you a lot. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of talked about it before. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what comes up for you when you think of honesty.
Good question.
There's many contexts that we could set around that word, but the way I really like the way that you think about it, and I think Marcus thinks about this as well, is just being honest with yourself, right? Like that, mm-hmm. that phrase.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I think definitely it's being honest with myself. You know, just looking back at, you know, probably my mid 20s or late 20s, you know, I remember going out on a run with a boyfriend at the time. And, you know, I like stated this goal that I wanted to make the Olympic trials as a triathlete. You know, it was like, and I felt it, you know, like I was emotional about it. Like I really wanted it, you know. But, you know, was I doing the training? Yes. Was I really living that lifestyle of being a, you know, Olympic level triathlete? No. You know, was I, you know, it's funny, like listening to Tenille's podcast, you know, when she was talking about, you know, the regionals athlete, there was someone that wants to be a regionals athlete that was like, hey, yeah, I'm going out with my friends on Saturday night. She's like, well, I guess you won't be going to regionals. Yeah. I mean, that was me.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was going out on a Saturday night with my friends and, you know, I wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't doing everything that I could do on the lifestyle and nutrition end. So I was really, you know, my priorities weren't really in becoming this Olympic level triathlete. So I wasn't at the time being honest with myself, you know, definitely like through relationships over the years, I wasn't being honest with myself or with the other person. So it's like, I feel like now I'm in a place where I'm being totally honest with, okay, these are my goals. You know, I pretty much live and breathe being an athlete and being a coach, and everything that I do outside of, you know, Revival Strength is supporting those goals. Mm. Like, you know, I'm in bed at 8:30. Like, I'm prepping my food on Sundays. You know, I'm up early on Sunday to do my laundry and food prep and all these things to get ready for, so that I have a successful week of coaching and you know, training. Those weren't things that I was implementing long ago. So that's kind of like, you know, and then there's like the daily honesty. It's like kind of checking in, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Like, did I do all the things today to set me up for my goals? Like, can I honestly say yes, you know, or is it a no, you know? So it's just like those sort of check-ins. Yeah.
Was there a specific moment that you can recall that sparked that for you? And like all of a sudden, like, you were like, damn, like I'm not being honest with myself. And then you started to, or was this an evolution, a slow evolution over time?
A little bit of both. I mean, it was really, which I've talked to you about before, you know, I was in a relationship for some time that was like, I'll call it my rock bottom relationship, where it was just, you know, I was trying to like fit a square peg into a round hole and really tried to make this thing work. And it just, you know, it just exploded on me. And I think through that, you know, that was a really a pivotal moment where it was like, okay, I need to chickity check myself. You know, I need to take some time to, you know, I basically took three years off of relationships and like found myself again, you know, and really just kind of worked on myself to figure out what I truly wanted, who I was. You know, I just was always a chameleon in a lot of my relationships. And I think in that 3-year process, it was like really, that was kind of my time of like getting back me and getting honest with myself. And, you know, I mean, even the time when I, you know, got Mike as a coach, it was kind of like, I did it because I was getting over this relationship, you know, and I remember telling him about like, hey, I had this really just messed up relationship and I'm, you know, this is my new goal. I was like almost going up down the same path I was going in before when I like stated that goal of being, you know, Olympic level triathlete. But this time, like, I don't know, over the process of everything, I just made that decision. Like, no, I truly do want this goal. And, you know, just seeing, I think having someone like Marcus around where, you know, he is so honest, I think that was such like a, you know, it just trickled down. It was like, wow, I want to be like, you know, I want to, like, in some ways, like, I know that's kind of funny to say, it was like, I want to be like that, you know. Yeah. I want to be that consistent. I want to be that honest. I want to be, you know, that's what I feel like I need in order to be successful at just being me, and then also just be successful at being a coach, you know, a good coach, and be successful in the goals that I've set out as being a competitive athlete.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of that old saying, right? Like the five people that you surround yourself, or like you are the average of the five people that you surround yourself with. And mm-hmm. It's like, there is some truth to that when you think about like just the environment that's cultivated here and the way that everybody just operates. And yeah. Like, you know, it's somewhere between that 11 to 2. It's like, or not always, but a lot of us, like, everybody's kind of training together. Everybody's eating their lunch together. Mm-hmm. Like that stuff slowly kind of trickles down, like you said, and rubs mm-hmm. off on you in a good way, or it could happen the other way too and be in a bad way as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I want to pick your brain a little bit about aerobic work, because mm-hmm. I know that's kind of your jam.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is something that's been, I've talked about this when Marcus was on too. It's like, it's new for me in the sense of like, when I think of my own training background, I never had like dedicated focus on building an engine. It was always strength focused. And when I was competing in weightlifting, it was like all in on that and not really even concerned about, you know, can I breathe well when I'm on the assault bike and things like that. But mm-hmm. recently I've had this like, all right, I'm gonna pursue this, and I'm gonna try to kind of improve some of the basic metrics that we kind of tested, and like I want to go through this process to see what it's like for myself so I can also write better prescriptions when it comes to aerobic work for other people. I want to know kind of your thoughts on, where do you start with somebody who, let's say they do have some experience in group fitness where we breathe heavy and we've done maybe some touches of aerobic work, but where do you start somebody who really maybe doesn't have much experience with true like engine building and breathing work? Mm-hmm. What's kind of like when somebody comes to you, what's that prescription kind of look like?
I mean, it really depends on, yeah, I mean, it could start, it depends on the person, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could start, I mean, I've started someone as just simple as like, go for walks.
Yeah.
You know, 3 to 4 times a week, you know, 40 minutes, or just maybe start them off even at, you know, 20 or 30 minutes and kind of build it up to an hour. So it could look as simple as that to begin. It also just depends on the person's goals. You know, obviously if someone is just looking to, you know, feel good, look good, I'd probably just start them there. And then if someone's like, you know, I want to be competitive in the sport of fitness and they don't have a lot of aerobic background, it could be a combination of, you know, walks like I described, because most likely they might be training twice a day if they're having, you know, if they have goals that they want to be, you know, a regional level athlete or something mm-hmm. like that, then I may start them with walks. And then also on top of that, you know, it could look like a 30-minute assault bike, you know, maybe every 5 minutes, get off and do, you know, a few exercises of some sort, you know, step ups, sit ups, or an FLR or something like that. Or, you know, it could look like, you know, depending on if where along, you know, the aerobic continuum they sit, you know, I may even implement some, like, you know, 10 minute AMRAPs at, you know, mixed modal work, but like easy mixed modal work, like we've been talking about, like step ups, hip extensions, sit ups, sled drags, that kind of thing, where it's basically forcing them to move slowly, but yet they are getting a little bit of touches on that mixed modal work.
Yeah, that whole area is really fascinating to me, because you know, I tried it, I think it was last weekend or 2 weeks ago, and you know, I did the 10-minute AMRAPs. It was like a 10-minute, maybe it was an assault bike, and then it was a 10-minute of like wall balls, burpees, and box jumps. And in terms of my perceived effort, like, sure, in the breathing aspect of things, I felt okay, like I'm fine. But then in terms of like my actual like muscle endurance, like it was fading away pretty quickly, and it was no longer aerobic.
Right.
And that was something like we talked about afterwards, and it was interesting for me to think about the ways that you can almost force an athlete to slow down, that you mentioned this, like you can force somebody to slow down based off of the exercises that you kind of give them. So like with me, if I had that, the wall ball box jump and burpees, it's like I did try to move slower and kind of pace for that 10-minute period, but it's like you can only pace so much. It is going to jack your heart rate up, and to a point where I did feel on that RPE scale like, all right, that was kind of like an 8 or 9, you know, which was like that's another interesting point, right? It's like, hey, we don't always want an 8 or 9, like if you're building in trying to, you know, build your aerobic capacity. It's like we want to hover in that space where it's a 6 or 7 out of 10 sometimes. And it's like that feeling, I feel like, is hard for a lot of people to grasp, especially when we come from that background of like intensity is all, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, it is really challenging, I find, to, as a coach, you know, to coach someone, you know, they think it's almost like going backwards, but really it's like you have, you know, I always hear James like say this, like, you haven't earned that yet. You know, you haven't earned that intensity. You don't even have the foundation to do that intensity. Mm-hmm. And so really trying to talk them back and go, okay, you know, we need to build your aerobic, you know, basically build your aerobic base, and we need to do repeats at this pace for this long, you know, and you need to hold and maintain that, you know, whatever it may be, like a 10-minute assault bike like you're talking about, and you need to hold 55 RPMs for the whole 10 minutes, can be really challenging for some people. But that's when, you know, I've heard Mike say this, it's like, that's when you've got to like put in the, you know, the priorities of like, you got to educate the client, you got to educate the athlete on, you know, why they're doing that, why it's important. And, you know, also the re-education of, you know, intensity isn't always the best, especially depending upon, you know, someone's lifestyle. If their stress bucket is filled to the brim because of work and family, and, you know, they can't come into the gym and do high intensity training.
Yeah.
They're not going to get the goals that they want to achieve.
Right. Yeah. How do you with your clients kind of go about feeling out, is the right, are they pushing hard enough? Are they going too easy? Like, there's that RPE scale. Is that something that you kind of go back and forth with a lot? Like, hey, how did that feel? And what's like your process for kind of feeling that out?
No, absolutely. I mean, I definitely will do, I mean, there's certain tests that I'll do, but also I use the RPE based on a scale of 1 to 20. How did that feel? You know, I, especially with aerobic work, you know, I often will give that, if I gave someone, you know, let's just call it 6 sets of row repeats, you know, 500-meter row repeats at a certain pace, you know, and they finish, they're like, yeah, got all those done at the pace that you prescribed. And then I'll say, okay, well, could you have done 6 more at that same pace? You know, so aerobic. It's, you know, it's sustainable, it's repeatable, right?
Yeah.
So if they're like, oh man, no way, like I couldn't have done another six more, like I was done. Well, then I know that that wasn't the true dose response that I was looking for. So then, okay, it's time to, okay, that's not the right pace for you. You know,
back it down a little bit.
I mean, I've implemented some tests where I've kind of tested that out, you know, before giving someone a set pace to hit. So I have a good idea of what that 75 or 85% may be.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So sticking with this kind of 10-minute time domain, since we're already kind of on it.
Yeah.
If we kind of take somebody who is running, let's say, a marathon, right? They're preparing for a marathon. We have to kind of work backwards from that point. And let's say we're using like, hey, you're going to run 10 minutes at this pace where you want to feel like a 6 or 7 out of 10 mm-hmm. exertion.
Yeah.
The general idea, if I understand correctly, is, okay, we establish this pace and then we want to build volume on that pace mm-hmm. over time.
Yeah.
Right. What can that look like? Because sometimes it's not sexy when you think about it. It's like if we're preparing for a marathon and you're, you know, let's say we're using running, over time, that could look like how many sets?
I mean, that could look like a lot, right?
Right?
I mean,
yeah.
You know, if the idea is, you know, they're running a marathon, so let's, you know, they're going to be somewhere in the 3 to 4 hour range,
yeah.
right? So... my math is bad right now, but you know, that could be 10 minutes times how many is that? That's like,
that's a lot.
12 plus another 6. I mean, yeah. I mean, let's just call it whatever, 18. I mean, it could be 18, 10 minute repeats.
Right.
No, that doesn't look, it's not sexy. But you know, it's, I mean, how, you know, if the goal is to do a marathon then, and you wanted to do it at a certain pace, then you're going to have to get comfortable with that pace for a long period of time. So
yeah.
How else are you going to do that? You know, there's no other way around it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, that's just, it is what it is.
Right.
Know, that's what you're training for.
Yeah. No, I like that example because your job as a coach sometimes is to do that for people, right?
Right.
Where it's like, look, you said you wanted X, we're doing Y, but like, we got to do this over and over and over again mm-hmm. if we want to still get to X, right? And
yeah.
sometimes that causes that reflection point for the client where it's like, oh, well, maybe I don't really want that. You know, maybe
absolutely.
I don't want to run a marathon.
No, absolutely. Which is great to figure out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's, if you don't want to be on the road for 3.5 hours or whatever it may be, then yeah, it might not be your jam.
Yeah.
You know, and what a great way to figure that out through the training process, you know?
Yeah. Now let's kind of turn that, like we were looking at just running or just rowing or just biking in that 10-minute time domain.
Mm-hmm.
But now if we have a mixed modal element to that, right, where we had, let's say, burpees, wall balls, box jumps, but that was maybe, I mean, for somebody like, let's say, Marcus, like he could probably sustain that and make that super aerobic and he would be totally fine. For
yeah.
somebody like me that was trickling into that, you know, pushing the envelope and is this really aerobic or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't think I can sustain this if I did it like 3 more times, right?
Right.
What are some ways that you think about to consciously kind of slow somebody down within that to make it a true what we want at that 10-minute pace?
Right. I mean, I definitely would mix in things that would, I mean, like you said, like cause them to slow down. So, you know, I might even implement a heavier wall ball, right? Because if you did a 30-pound wall ball and you were doing 10 reps, well, maybe you would break that up into 5 reps. It would kind of force you to break it up because you'd notice like, oh, okay, this is kind of heavy. I'm kind of breathing hard. Maybe I should chop this up into two sets. Or there might be things where, you know, implementing step ups, you know, where it's going to force someone to slow down. Russian step ups are a great way to slow someone down. Doing a farmer's carry or a kettlebell front rack carry or something like that is going to slow someone down. Planks are awesome. If you prescribe a 30-second plank, you know, they can't.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. So doing things like that to get people to slow down a bit. Yeah.
And especially when we, I guess, think about somebody who wants to get better at the sport of CrossFit, mm-hmm. right? I know James says that term all the time, where it's like, you got to be able to make dynamic contractions aerobic. Mm-hmm. And that starts with you know, potentially getting that feel through things like step ups and air squats, even like exactly. things that will consciously make you be like, all right, I'm good. Like, I can hang out here and I can do that over and over and over.
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. Do you feel like when you were swimming, mm-hmm. like the way that, you know, endurance, like there's progression within swimming to be able to prep for, you know, whatever the peak of that event is for you in that year? Mm-hmm. Did that carry over? Like, did you take away a lot of principles and things like that that are still to this day you're using? Because I'm not too familiar with, like, what, I don't know, what it looks like in a traditional, if I was on a swim team or if I was on the track team, like, what would progression look like to be able to build my engine?
Yeah.
I haven't gone that route, but I've always been curious, like, what's that look like?
I mean, I feel like when I was in swimming, it was still, like I was talking about, just that garbage yardage. You know, I feel like in the time of, you know, great swimmers like Michael Phelps and, you know, Natalie Coughlin, and there's been some, you know, evolution within the sport where it's been more, like David Salo is a great coach down in Southern California, and, you know, lots of changes within the sport, you know,
yeah.
It like it used to be just, okay, honestly, like, I mean, I'm sure there were weeks, I wish I had the Fitbit back then, you know, or something where I could have calculated how many yards or meters that I did in a week, because it was just ridiculous. And I was a 200 meter backstroker. My event was 2 minutes, and I was doing, you know, 6,000 plus meters in a workout, you know, a day. I mean, so I would do like 12,000 meters maybe in one day easily.
Mm.
And so I feel like now it's like the whole, it's changed so much, you know. Even distance swimmers don't necessarily do distance swimming. It's like, even a miler, you know, their race is, you know, under 15 minutes. So really that's not really that long. I mean, it is in swimming, but it's not really that long of a race. So it's like, you know, 15 100s at a really high effort. Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like that type of training has been more implemented than like, all right, we're going to do, you know, 3,000, you know, meters,
yeah.
You know, 5 minutes rest in between, go, you know. I don't feel like there is as much of that work, although there is still some of that work, because I think that it is important to some extent to build that, you know, aerobic base and foundation through some easy, long swimming,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah.
Now, when we take a look at, we've talked about kind of performance and how this would relate if we're running a marathon or if we're competing in the sport of CrossFit, but now when we think of somebody who's just like general population, like health and longevity, just wants to look good and move well,
yeah.
Aerobic work, what kind of role does it play in that person's fitness? Like, how much should they be doing, and you know, why?
I mean, I think in a look good, feel good type of client, I think, like, you know, obviously depending upon what their lifestyle is like, and, you know, depending on job and stress and all that, I mean, the majority of their training should be aerobic, because it's first of all conducive to good body composition.
Mm-hmm.
It's low demand on the central nervous system. So this idea of going to some of these places where it's like these high intensity workouts, again, on top of, you know, having a high stress job, is just not conducive. Like, just come in the gym and do your strength training, which you could get, you know, if you wanted to, you could get a lot of great breather work through good German body comp type strength training. Yeah. And then, you know, get on the bike and 20 minutes, like 75%, and that's, you're done, you know? So I think that a lot of the look good, feel good, that should be the majority of their training. It's great flush, again, like low on the central nervous system.
Yeah, I think this may have been something that was on like one of the calls, the OPEX calls in the last couple of weeks, where it's like we were talking about when you get anaerobic hits of intensity, it's like that can play a role in, like, your body goes into the survival mode to be able to repair from that. And it's like, it can affect how tight you are, right? And what your mobility looks like and what your recoverability is like day to day. And so when I think about, that's just been a big eye opener for me. When I think about aerobic work and I think about James saying, like, we're trying to coordinate three things together. It's the cardio system, the lungs, and the muscles, like all three of those things together, and right. not trying to overdevelop one or the other. And to do that, it's like, this is at least my like experience with it. You know, when I was doing that 10-minute AMRAP, it's like, okay, my breathing was fine. my lungs were fine, but it was like my muscles were just not able to sustain what I was doing to be able to repeat that like three more times. Right. It's just interesting, like aerobic work truly has this role in somebody's life beyond like the performance element of it and like, oh, I'm going to be able to breathe better. But like when we really think about what's going on physiologically, like there's a lot of shit going on that, I mean, even me, like I don't have the understanding of yet. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on there that we can impact through that type of training.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. If there was like one thing that somebody should kind of take away when it comes to like if they want to start doing more aerobic work and actually building an engine, what's kind of something you would encourage them to think about?
I mean, I think that often, well, I'll just say this. I think, first of all, get a coach.
Yeah.
I think that oftentimes, you know, even I've been coaching my mom through, she wants to get back into running. And I think, you know, people get these ideas in their head that it's like, okay, I want to start getting my, you know, whatever. I want to start getting back in shape and I want to start running again or maybe swimming or whatever it may be. I'm going to go run for 30 minutes, you know? And it's like, okay, wait a minute. You went from zero running and now you're going to go out and run for 30 minutes. You know, when was the last time you ran? What, you know, so I think people just have these ideas of just going like straight into it and just like, you know,
all or nothing,
all or nothing. Yeah. And it's like, okay, you're just going to get yourself sore. I think of anything, it's like, yeah, that's why I think it's important to have a coach. It's like, okay, a coach is really just going to ease you into this and give you the correct progressions in order to achieve your goal. So if that's, you know, if you want to run a 10K or whatever it may be, or, you know, you're just looking to get more aerobically fit, a coach is going to know how to progress you into that. And if you go and do it on your own, then I would just say, like, start easier than you actually think. Like, if you think that you should go and run a 30-minute, like, go run for 30 minutes, like, take that and go walk for 30 minutes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, right. like knock it down. And I think just people, you know, often set themselves up for failure because they just start off way too hard and then they get sore or it's not sustainable and they're not able to maintain the consistency and then they just kind of give up.
Yeah.
So, that would be my one, like, just start so much easier than you actually think that you should start. Or like maybe it's, you go out for 30 minutes and you run for 1 minute and then you walk for 3 or 4 minutes, you know, something like that, where it's just like you're easing yourself, you know, back into it.
I think the tricky part here is like, if you do it without a coach, you can get away with it for a little while. And then what happens, and people are, right, is like you can get away with making progress without maybe something that's tailored to you, or having a coach who's writing this stuff out for you, or following a group program. But what happens is, like, you eventually become a more trained individual. And then once that happens, it's like, okay, it's a little bit harder to make progress and a little bit harder to make progress. And then you hit that point where it's like, you could be doing, you know, what you think is all the right things, but it's really having an adverse effect, you know, whether it's body composition or you becoming more aerobically fit. It's like, why isn't this working? I'm like trying all these things that used to work and it's not working anymore.
Right.
It's like, you know, maybe you've gotten a little bit better and you've kind of tapped out and you need some actual well thought out progression and principles behind what you're doing.
Absolutely. And I mean, you just made me think about when I ran my first marathon based on like a template that I found in like Runner's World or something. I just found something really basic and ran a marathon with a friend. And then after that, you know, I really realized, I was like, okay, I want to qualify for Boston, you know. And then I reached out to a coach that I knew was, you know, was a referral from a friend that had coached her into running marathons. And it was like, okay, you know, I just realized how important it was. Like, okay, here I want to qualify for Boston. Like, that's a specific goal. I can't go off of a template from Runner's World. I mean, it made me successful in my first marathon, but, you know, I got to do something different now, you know? And even like the coach that I got, like, looked at that template. He was like, you did that? And I was like, yeah. He was like, okay, yeah, that was a little aggressive, but okay. You know, and I mean, of course I had a big training background in swimming and triathlon. So I think, you know, I was able to handle it, but anyway, it was, you know, it was just, I really needed his support and his guidance, or else I wouldn't have known, you know, how to train for it.
Right. What you said before, with kind of starting off too hot, you know, most people doing that, like, that totally reminds me of something Dr. John Berardi, I've heard him kind of, I think it was in a book from Precision Nutrition, and he talks about like how most people, when we talk about food and diet, right, like all diets break at some point, like it's going to break. So it's like he asks, like, what does it look like when it breaks? And then you start from there.
Yeah.
You know, you start working with the deficiencies and like slaying them one by one from the moment that it's going to break. Not like, oh, well, what does it look like in a perfect world? It's like, what do you do when like life happens? And then let's kind of start from that point and then build our way back up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a much more like sustainable approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So I have a couple rapid fires for you.
Okay.
If you had $2 billion, right, and you had a staff of 40 people, the 40 people are top performers, top thinkers in whatever it is that you've recruited them for, and you want to do something with that, whatever that might be, whether it's some type of impact, some type of change, pursuing some type of passion, you know, the point is money and energy and time is not an issue. You have everything kind of at your disposal. What would you do with it?
Oh man, that's just a tough question. You know, it's kind of funny. What came to my mind was the ocean. But then just like environmental stuff, you know, just like helping the environment. But I think, you know, honestly, I think it would be something around like, you know, like kids, you know, helping kids be more, you know, educated and like nature. And I feel like we're going towards this, I mean, we already are, like, in this technological, you know, age of iPhones and, you know, computers and, you know, everything. Like, we're so invested in that stuff and we're so in our phones and our computers, and so I feel like, you know, I think we're losing touch with nature and kind of what's going on in our natural world. And so just implementing some like educational programs, like getting kids out in the water and like teaching them about like, you know, the sea life and sea anemones. And I don't know if you ever heard of O'Neill Odyssey, which is the O'Neill Foundation down in Santa Cruz, but they take kids out on boats and like show them the marine life, like something to that, something like on that, something around that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. Like sharing perspective in a sense.
Yeah. Just like getting them out of their phones and, yeah. And just like having an appreciation for nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say that you're still a billionaire, right?
Okay.
And you can give 2 to 3 books to every person in the world. Maybe 1 to 3 books, right? Just 1 to 3 pieces that resonated with you that you'd like to kind of share with people. What would they be?
Wow. I think one of them that comes to mind is a book by Eric Pepin, Handbook of the Navigator. He writes a lot of books on meditation. And it's a spiritual book, but it's more just like it does a great job of bridging, you know, science and spirituality. So a lot of it's just like based on Big Bang Theory and how the whole world started. And I think it just opened up my eyes to just something like bigger, you know, and I've gotten really into meditation in the past year, and I think everyone could benefit from some form of meditation.
Yeah.
So that's probably at the top of the list.
Awesome.
All of his books are great, to be honest.
Okay.
I've read like a good portion of his books. As far as another book, and I can't think of the name of it, but it's Andre Agassi's biography. Talk about honesty. Man,
yeah.
He puts it out there. Like his whole... You know, it's not like life changer type of book for everyone to read, but I just think that, you know, his honesty of just the way that he approached the sport was just like mind blowing for me. I mean, he didn't even like tennis, which was just like, dude, you were like one of the greatest tennis players ever and you didn't even like it from an early age. And he just really put all of his heart and soul into the book. And I just like, I was like, okay, I totally respect that athlete.
Yeah.
Like, he's amazing.
I'll find the name of that and link it
up. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, trying to think one more book.
Yeah.
Another. I mean, it's not like a life-changing book, but I thought that Good to Great was an amazing book. Just kind of put some things into perspective of just like elevating my own self and my business and, you know, yeah, I thought that was an amazing book too.
Awesome. I will get all that linked up in the show notes. And they're all 3 titles that I don't think I've read before, so I'll look into it.
Yeah.
So my personal opinion is when we think of anybody who, in their own world, relative to themselves, have achieved a high level of success, right? Mm-hmm. Or any top performer, elite performer in any field, it's like there came this point where, you know, you had to jump without knowing what was really gonna happen. Like you had to take this leap, right?
Mm.
And you jumped and the parachute didn't open right away, right? You got torn up by cliffs, your clothes fell off, like all sorts of stuff happened before that parachute actually opened back up and you had that safe landing. Can you think of a moment or a story that resonates with you? It could be at any point kind of during your life that may have been a pivotal moment to like what you're doing today and what you've achieved, a moment where you kind of had to take a leap without knowing what was going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think, the one that came to mind, the most recent one was when, you know, I left when Marcus sold his half of the gym in Mill Valley. And I, you know, decided 2 weeks later that I was going to jump ship as well. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. There was no plans of Revival Strength. There was no plans of anything. And it was a big leap for me. You know, I just knew, like, it was like that gut feeling. Like, I remember even talking to Mike about it, where it was like, I just know in my gut that I have to leave. I didn't know what was going to happen financially for me. I didn't know what clients of mine that I had as far as personal training clients would follow me once I left that gym. So it was just like, it was a big leap of faith. And look, it all worked out.
Yeah.
But it was a scary moment, you know, and I remember talking to my mom about it and, you know, talking to a lot of people about it that were important to me, Marcus. And, I just knew that there was something better for me on the other side, but didn't know when.
That's amazing. Is there something you wish people would ask you more about, something you don't get asked enough about. And what I mean by this question is, like, you know, when you think of, I'll use podcasting as an example, is like, when people ask me questions around like, hey, what microphone do you use? Or like, what equipment do I need? Or like, where do you host this stuff? It's like, you could Google that, you know, and like find an answer. But it's like, if you're gonna ask somebody a question, you know, around, and like, sometimes I wish people would ask questions around like, hey, how do I actually get better at asking questions? Or, you know, something related to communication or conversation, like the elements of podcasting itself. Do you ever experience that at all? Like, you get a lot of questions around this one thing, but you wish people would ask something else, or maybe they would ask other types of questions?
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
It could be totally related to coaching and nutrition, fitness, like anything.
You know, it's funny because I just got asked like on my Facebook feed about, you know, what's a great exercise for abs, you know. It's funny how like how many people ask questions around like my training, or, you know, which, you know, and I do post a lot about my training, so I can understand why people would generally ask those questions, you know. But it's just funny, like, getting the, like, how do I get abs? I don't know. I mean, I wish, it's not really for me personally, like, me personally, but I wish that people would be just more, like, I feel like with the way that social media is, I feel like it, like, you know, we've gotten more superficial. It's like, you ask people how they are, and people are like, oh, I'm fine. When really, like, are you fine?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, are you really okay? You know, which maybe they are, but, like, no one really dives deeper into, like, really, like, how are you doing? Like, how are you doing, Mizbah? Like, or, you know, wow, I saw that you, I don't know, I see that you're, you know, going to the beach a lot lately. Like, what's that about? You know, I wish that people would dig deeper,
yeah, in,
on things, versus just ask like superficial questions. You know, it's just fun. It's just like funny how human beings, like, you know, I don't know if it's, I don't know what it is, but it's just like, we don't really ask like the important questions. We always ask the superficial.
Yeah.
So I'd like,
that's amazing that you just said that, because I literally had a conversation with somebody, like, that episode is going to air too, and I think it was to this exact same question. He had that same answer. He's like, when people say, how are you? It's like, you know, hey, how are you? You know, but like, yeah, really, like, how are you? You know, like, nobody yeah really does that anymore.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to think about, and kind of when you think about the, like, why and like the overall dynamic of it all, it's like there's so many pieces at play, but like I think you're right. I think technology and social media plays a huge role in that. It's like, I don't know, it's conditioned.
Yeah, and I think we also just get like caught up in our day-to-day life. Yeah. Like, we don't have necessarily the time to, you know, truly have deep conversations, you know. I don't think actually our culture is necessarily set up for it. Like, I feel like, you know, and I just, it just, this came to my mind, but like the French, like, they conversate around food, like, all the time. Like, they're having conversations around food, and I feel like it's more in depth, and like, they're like, you know, getting real close and like really talk, like, even the Italians that we had here.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, I don't know if you saw some of their conversations, but they were like, literally, like, face to face, and like just hand motions, and like getting like heated and talking, and, you know,
right,
like, and like at one point I'm like, are they mad at each other? And it was like, no, they're just like really, like, whatever conversation they're having, they're in it, and they're like really present with each other, and they're sharing something that's like, that they're like passionate about. And I just don't often, like, I want more of that.
Yeah.
You know,
less small talk and more
less
of, like,
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else that you would like to leave listeners with, you know, like any coaches or athletes that are listening, anything you'd like them to take away specifically?
I mean, yeah, like, just follow your passion, follow your dreams. Like, I don't know, my stepdad always like puts this little quote at the end of my cards that say, go for it. you know, and I kind of like roll my eyes at it, but at the same time, like, I think like it's his way of just like do it, like keep doing what you're doing, like do what you love and explore, like don't listen to those voices that are like telling you like, you know, maybe you shouldn't go to that break dancing class, like you're not really that good, you know, like those voices, it's like, no, don't listen to that. If that's like something that you're truly passionate about and you want to go do, then go do it. Like, what's stopping you from doing it? So I think that's what, yeah, I would leave people with.
I love that. Where can we kind of point people to? How can people learn more about you, follow along with your journey? And yeah, where can we put people to?
Instagram, at Shauna Lynn Guzman is, that's a good place. I'm on Facebook, Shauna Guzman. If you want to email me, Shauna@revival-strength.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Shauna, for coming on. I had a blast chatting, and we'll definitely have to have you back on sometime.
All right. Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. I appreciate you taking the time, tuning in, and lending me your ears. Two things I want to leave you with before you head out. Number one, if you are a coach or a gym owner, head over to theairbornemind.com and check out some of the free resources we have for you there. Myself and a clinical psychologist are partnering together to create a course called The Art of Connection Through Questions. It's something I've loved and studied and has fulfilled me for years. And to be able to finally put this together in a way that's going to help other coaches and gym owners connect deeply with their clients is super fulfilling for me. So if that sits well with you, head over to theairbornemind.com and check it out. Number two, leave a review on iTunes. It's the best compliment that you can give, and it would mean the absolute world to me. But other than that, hope you enjoyed this one. Until next time.